path to a better life begins with a simple step. Empower Radio presents Simple Steps, Real Change with Cheryl Maloney. Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Cheryl Maloney.
Do you feel like you're back at square one when you thought you'd be living out your golden years in ease? Did your life take a tumble or two and you're upside down, or so you think? When we face the unexpected and the unthinkable, we have a decision to make. Are we going to let it bury us, or are we going to rise above us? Those are all really easy concepts to understand, unless, of course, you're seeing life from a really dark and scary place. And I know if you're in a place that you never imagined or wanted yourself to be, today's guest is going to speak to you. Meredith Marin is the author of The Old New Me, and today we're continuing our conversation with Meredith about navigating the rough waters of starting over later in life. And if you missed the first show with Meredith, you can listen on demand. Just go to our show page and listen in at your leisure. Meredith, welcome back to the show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me back.
I really appreciate you doing this because I know your book resonated with me. I started over later in life for different reasons, but before you went through this major change in your life with starting over, what was your vision of what you would be doing when you were in your 60s? What was your dream?
that's a very painful question to be asked.
For all of us.
I know I had the same, pretty much the same vision most people have, which is how we grew up, those of us born in the 50s, that, you know, we would work hard all our lives, and then at a certain point, a buzzer would go off, and it would be time to start coasting and cruising, either literally in a Winnebago of some kind, or, you know, figuratively, meaning that things would slow down, and life would be easy, and there would be a gone fishing sign on my front door.
It's true. Those of us that grew up in the 50s or were born in the 50s and grew up, life at 65 was supposed to be the time that you retired and everybody else did the work. But now that people are living into their 90s and beyond, 65's just a number.
Right.
But when you went through your upheaval, and tell our audience, for those that are listening in for the first time, what happened in your 60s that turned your life upside down?
It was the very beginning of my 60s. I was actually just turning 60, and there was sort of a cavalcade of events that none of which is so unusual in itself. It was the combination, with the hurricane analogy. It was just a big wallop, and that was that my dad was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease, and my best friend died suddenly of cancer, and I had who turned out to be an unscrupulous financial advisor, and so all my savings disappeared, and the worst thing was that my very, very happy marriage to my wife of 16 years had just fallen apart.
That's four pretty tough hits in a very short period of time.
I agree.
What was the time frame? So with all of that, was that all going on within a year, a couple years, a few months?
6 months.
Six. Yeah. That's a lot to go through when you're thinking at 65, you're going to be, like you say, on that gone fishing sign. And
right, exactly. Yes, I felt very smug, actually, because even though I did not have a very traditional career trajectory, I was a child of the 60s and I'm a writer, and I didn't expect anybody to give me a gold watch and a retirement fund, but I thought I was very smart for having picked well in terms of my marriage, and was extremely happy with my wife, and we were always congratulating ourselves about how we had the most important thing, which was love and each other, and that we would have a beautiful life going into the golden age.
And then life changed, and I think that we talked originally when I read what you had to say in your book, and actually it was an article that I read and then found your book. You talked about your life going from this beautiful place to being, you know, back at starting all over again? Did you feel like you were back at square one?
I felt like square one was somewhere off in the distance. I was sort of a square minus 1,000. That's how I felt. I really did. I felt like, you know, because it isn't the same to try to make a life for yourself when you're 60 as it is when you're 30 or 40. And I had done those things before, but never at this age and never, you know, the other times I did it, it felt like a choice, you know, like I just wanted to move to New Mexico from New York City, or I wanted to move to London, or I wanted to do something new. But in this case, there was nothing I had that I didn't want. You know, my existing life was just great. And so there was no sort of relief factor of, oh, I never did want to live in New York City. I'm so lucky I get to live in the mountains of New Mexico. It was much more just one big bummer after another.
Well, as you're going through this, and I actually like the way you put this, that square one felt like it was so far away from where you were. Did you run into, because this is something that seems to be a common thread, we think that we've fallen so far back that we've failed, but we also think about others must think that somehow we have failed and fallen back too. Did you run into that during this time? Others that were just going, oh my God, let me just feel sorry for you. And that made it worse.
Well, no, actually.
Oh, good.
I didn't really, I have to say, in a way, it's a sign of how bad things were, that I was so miserable that I didn't really have the bandwidth to even think about what anyone else was thinking and I didn't even feel sorry for myself. I really didn't. It's kind of like if you're ever, I once was in a very serious car accident. Luckily, everyone was fine. But in those last few seconds before hitting the guardrail, you're really not thinking about, you know, whether your medical insurance is up to date, you know? And it was kind of like that. It was like things were coming so fast and so hard that I couldn't, you know, I couldn't really stop to think about anything. I just, you know, it really did take all my effort to just put one foot in front of the other.
I appreciate that. When you sit there and say, I didn't have time to think about it, I just kept moving. That takes a lot to keep moving when you've gone through the kind of upheaval that you've been through. And so many people listening have been through. It's hard just to put one foot in front of the other. How did you manage to do that? How did you actually manage to get up every day and keep going when you had gone through such a major change?
Well, you know, I talk about in the book, there were a couple of times when I really questioned whether I would keep going. And that is not like me. I have been through a lot of, you know, I've had a very interesting life, and there's an upside to a very interesting life. And there's a downside, and I had always felt that the downside was more than compensated for by the good side. You know, I didn't have to go to an office every day. I've had jobs for years at a time, but most of my life I've been a writer, and I've been able to have a lot of control over the hours in my day, as well as, you know, what kind of people I hang out with and all that. I was very accustomed to being in charge of my life in a big way. And so not being in charge of my life just really, really threw me for a loop. And there was, you know, there were a couple of really bad days when I just thought, why is it worth it to go on? You know, what is ever going to come of this that's going to be worth the pain I'm going through right now? It was, and the other thing was, there were a lot of things I had to actually do, which I think was both a bad thing and a good thing. I mean, anyone who's been through a divorce, which statistics would indicate many people listening right now have, knows that you don't just, it's not like proposing marriage where one minute you're single and the next minute someone has said, I want to marry you. It's a big job getting a divorce, and getting a divorce from a woman was even more work because it had just become legal to be married to same-sex person. And so nobody even knew how to do it, which was just that much harder. You know, I had to find a special lawyer who knew all the laws and all that. So, you know, there was a lot of work to do. There was a lot of undoing of a life I did not want to undo. But at a certain point, I realized that the weight of my past was just dragging on me. And if I didn't, you know, accept the fact that it wasn't my life anymore and bring it to some kind of closure, that I would never be able to have anything to replace it.
So, and that brings up an interesting question. Was there anything that you, I want to say saw coming, but was there any point as these events started to happen in your life that you realized your life was going to irrevocably change?
Yes, there were several of those moments. I mean, definitely, you know, the marriage had been falling apart for about 2 years at that point. We had been happily married for 13, and then things changed very dramatically and very quickly. So I already knew that, you know, that was being challenged. I never dreamed that the marriage would actually end. My wife and I were extremely committed to a forever marriage, and that was a big part of our kind of agreement with each other, that we wouldn't let anything tear us apart. So right up until the last moment that I actually filed for divorce, I continued to think that somehow we would come out of that intact. But, you know, the moment that I found out I had no money, that was definitely, it's a very unambiguous moment. Like, okay, I need to get some money somehow right now, you know, especially with the divorce costs and all that. So that was definitely a moment when I thought my life is about to change. I have no idea how I'm going to pull this off, but I have to get a source of income, which, you know, I hadn't done for many years. Not enough to live on and get a divorce also. And I got very lucky. I got a job offer, which was crazy. I mean, now when I think about it, to be 60 years old and get a job offer in another city, that's, you know, that was pretty lucky. And so that's really what saved the day. And it's also what brought me to Los Angeles.
Well, and that's a good place for a transition, because let's talk about that, because you literally went back to working in an office with a group of people that were significantly younger than you. And as you did that, and I love your sense of humor about this, because it became in so many ways Los Angeles and that job and just the radical change that you ended up making ended up being a good thing for you, don't you think?
I do. I mean, you know, sometimes I can't say sometimes, I think pretty much every day I wonder, what if any one of the things that happened when I was 60 hadn't happened? What if I were still married to my wife? What if I still had my life savings? You know, what if my best friend hadn't died? My dad becoming sick was more part of the natural order of things. You know, I it didn't make it any easier, but I'm sure a lot of your listeners have lost a parent, and that's the way it's supposed to happen. The parent's supposed to die before the child. So that was painful, but at least it didn't feel quite as tragic. And, you know, so I still ask myself that all the time. You know, what if? What if I was still living in the house I'd lived in at that point for 25 years and raised my kids in and all that? And I do feel like I prefer the life I have now in many ways to the life I had then, but I don't know if I'll ever get to a point where I'll say, I'm glad those things happened.
It's very hard when you go through the level of stress that so many have gone through and you've gone through to be able to say, you know, I'm grateful for this challenge. I sit there and say, am I grateful that my husband died? Absolutely not. But is there purpose mm-hmm. behind it? Probably. But if I keep asking, mm-hmm. what if? In fact, last week we did a what if show. You drive yourself crazy with what ifs, but you got into yes. Los Angeles and got into this environment. And we talked about this a little bit in the last show, where you being in this office of a different generation felt irrelevant. And that worked out to your benefit in so many ways, because you didn't have to explain yourself. Talk about that a little.
Right. Well, it was so ironic because when I first was going to, I went to work like the second day I arrived in LA, and I was in shock and I was, you know, grieving and all these things. And I thought, oh, well, I'll go to work and I'll make friends. You know, I'll have people to talk to. I won't be all alone in this strange, giant city. And then I got to work the first day and I noticed nobody was looking at me. It was, you know, this thing that we always hear about women turning invisible when they get to a certain age. And I just had never experienced it before because I wasn't really in the public. I was home writing and, you know, hanging out with my friends. I wasn't exposing myself to that kind of environment. So, it was really quite a shock. And at first it was horrible. I was, you know, if I thought I couldn't feel any more alone and isolated, I did. But then I started realizing that I don't know how I would have handled it if I'd had to go to work and answer questions like, how was your weekend? It might have killed me, you know, because I was very glad not to have to explain anything about my life to anyone on a Monday morning when I'd spent the whole weekend, you know, looking for a place to live and crying and not necessarily in that order.
Crying normally does come first in this process. I've learned
right.
that too.
Well,
as you got there, we talked before about the fact that it was embarrassing and you felt humiliated because you're living on friends' couches and you had mm-hmm. never had to do those things before, even probably when you were much younger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
How'd you get through that? How did you get yourself through living through your own embarrassment?
Well, at some point, the first night I was in Los Angeles, and I write about this in the book, I got a visit from God. I don't know how else to say it except that. I had believed in God when I was a young child and used to pray on my own. My parents were not religious, and I was never brought to any kind of religious institution, but I always felt the presence of God. And so the first night I was sleeping on a friend, well, not really a friend, it was a stranger's couch, and just feeling as alone and low as I've ever felt. And I just felt the presence of God and started talking to God about what was going on. And I can't say it was a classic, you know, don't worry, I'll take care of you kind of experience. I think I'm too much of a New York cynic for for that. But but it did make me feel a little less alone. And then my relationship with God kept growing over the months after that. And it helped. It's a process that's ongoing. I'm still in that process of just sort of realizing that I'm not in charge. And there's a downside to that and there's an upside, you know. And the downside is obvious. You don't get to choose, as I learned the hard way, how you're going to live out the rest of your life. But the upside is it's a lot less work to believe that, you know, there is some kind of a plan for you or that someone's looking after you and that you don't have to do every little thing yourself and figure out everything to the end of your life by yourself. And that helps me a lot even now. It's a lot better life for me when I don't think that I'm responsible for, you know, everything from who's our president to, you know, figuring out my own income or whatever, you know. It's just a lot better. It's a lot higher quality life, believing in a higher power.
That just seems to be one of those aha moments that we get, is to realize that we don't have control, but we don't have mm-hmm. to. And mm-hmm. if you were East Coast raised, as I was, everything was mm-hmm. supposed to be controlled. That's the way we mm-hmm. were raised. And mm-hmm. letting go of that. Don't you wish at some point in time you would have learned this in your 20s, 30s, or 40s? But okay, it
How
took
about
to
age
your...
two?
Yeah.
I would have liked to just grow up with it intact, you know, that would have been nice. But what are you going to do? There you go again with the what ifs, you know?
Yeah. We learn as it comes to us, and we, you know, you just do the best with it. And you've been amazing. I mean, you really, truly. And tell our audience a little bit about what your life's like right now.
Well, it's going through another set of changes. For starters, I was lucky enough that my dad left me a little bit of money so I could buy a little bungalow in Los Angeles. I'm sitting there now, and it's just the most adorable little 650 square foot place, and I love it. And I have some really nice spots to write. I built a garden for myself, and I'm outside almost all day every day, which is wonderful, and that's where I work. So that's really nice. I have amazing friends. It's a city where people find their tribe and stick together, because the city is so sprawling and so disorganized that, you know, you just kind of, you meet somebody and you say, where do you live? And if it's the wrong answer, you say, nice meeting you, bye. And if it's the right answer, you invite them for dinner. And, you know, people tend to stick together once they find each other. So that's been really wonderful. And, you know, I just find myself having more and more creative energy than I had in the past. And that's really great. So, you know, day to day, my life is really good. And, you know, my publisher went out of business a few weeks ago. So that's a big challenge. And, you know, relationships come and go. I stopped drinking 9 months ago. And that's, you know, a different way to live and rearrange a lot of things in my life. And so it just keeps happening. And it happened again on a 5-year schedule. I'm starting to think that I can pretty much plan on every 5 years starting over again. But this time there was a much firmer foundation intact. So I didn't suffer as much just from the shock of having to go through some changes again.
As you're talking to this audience, because the 5-year turnover and change of events, if I sit here and think about that, it's like, yeah, that pretty much 5-6 years pretty much does it. But you found, and I think this is where the wisdom lies, you found the more you go through this, the more you can deal with it. Even though some of these things are not expected and not planned, you've lived through so much in your life
mm-hmm.
that you have adapted better.
Yeah, it's like money in the bank in a way. You know, you can make withdrawals once you've made a lot of deposits. And, you know, I've developed some tools for living that I definitely didn't have 5 years ago. And I'm sure I'll have some 5 years from now that I don't have today. But I don't feel as afraid as I did before. I didn't even know to be afraid until it all fell apart. And then when it did fall apart, I was terrified. It wasn't just that I was sad or, you know, stressed or had a lot of things to figure out. It was just, you know, completely terrified. Just, you know, that how am I going to do this? And now when things go wrong, I might feel sad or I might feel stressed, but I don't have any question that I can handle it.
It's amazing how the life challenges that we experience, we wish we could have learned it some other way, but because we can handle just about anything. Well, we're getting close to the end of the show. I know it's just flown by. So before I let you go, if you can just share with our audience, what's the best way to find your books and any way to reach out to Meredith Marin?
My books are available pretty much everywhere, starting with the online retailer we all know, Amazon.
It's okay. You can say Amazon.com. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's Meredith Marin, and you can Google me. And when you do, you'll get to my website, and my email address is there. And I love to hear from readers. And I also write book reviews for a lot of newspapers and magazines, including People Magazine and the Washington Post and so on. So if you Google me and go to my website, you'll probably know more about me than I do about myself.
Someone has gone out there and researched all of you. Well, as I said,
right,
when I talked to you, reading your book was a revelation for me, because I too went back to work in my 60s among a much younger group. And instead of feeling mm-hmm. ignored, I realized I didn't matter. It didn't matter. And mm-hmm. you inspired me in so many ways. So I am very grateful that you've been willing to join me on 2 shows now. And I just really appreciate you taking the time to be with us here again. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Very sweet of you to say so.
All right. This is Cheryl Maloney with Simple Steps, Real Change. We've been talking with Meredith Marin, the author of The Old New Me, The New Old Me, The Old New Me. Sorry. And this is just an amazing book. If you go out, as Meredith said, Google her or go to Amazon.com, and it's Meredith Marin, M-A-R-A-N. And for those of you that are starting over in life, there is wisdom with every time you face a new challenge. You're not back at square one. You've got the wisdom to sustain you. This is Cheryl Maloney. Thanks for being here with us. Have a great week.